and welcome to Talk Around Town. I'm Deborah Schnabel, your guide through today's talk about things that matter. Stay tuned for our current news analysis with Tom Orfitt and Margaret Friedenauer. Today's talking topic is Haines Tourism. Our guests are Tourism Director Tanya Carlson and Tourism Advisory Board Member Judy Heinmiller-Clark. We'll check in with Alcoholics Anonymous, and My Name Is introduces us to, we'll wait and see. This is Talk Around Town. Margaret and Tom, how are you today?
Great, Deborah. How
Good.
Are you?
Well, I'm there. I'm here.
And Good morning, Deb.
I've got all the knobs and the bells and the whistles, and we're doing okay. Was it a big week?
I don't think particularly.
We had an election.
We did have an election. We didn't have the signs. We didn't have the big campaigns that we had in the past.
It didn't get too snarky.
And we didn't have the big issues, really.
Yeah.
The biggest was, of course, the financial disclosure. Wicked Witch is dead. We rid ourselves of the bugaboo of having to disclose most of our finances to the electorate. We've lost a level of transparency, and we've gained, hopefully, more participation in the process.
That's now, Margaret, I'd like to hear your perspective on that. I think that Tom has, over the years, been a strong advocate for full disclosure, and it's not that we don't have full disclosure,
right,
but the disclosure as described by the state of Alaska.
At the state level?
At the state level. And your take on that? Have we harmed ourselves? Have we put up a curtain? Are we more opaque?
I don't know. As a journalist, I don't like to see those kind of transparencies disappear. I really don't. I mean, I can see the argument about keeping it quote-unquote local and doing it locally, but when you already have a state agency created to do those things, and in my opinion they do them well, I've worked with APOC on several things over the years as a journalist, and they're really open to the public questions, they're really open to journalists' questions, and I had no problem with the way the state agency did it. They tightened up the regulations over the past few years because of some of the stuff happening at the state level. And I can see where local officials may be like, why are we on the same level as state officials when it comes to having to, give all this information? But on the same hand, I'm not sure what's bad about it. It's not a right to run for public office. Mm-hmm. It's a privilege, and there's certain things that go along with it. And if you don't like the things that go along with running for public office that the public has voted in or decided on over the years and are put into effect by the state, then, mm-hmm. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we still have public disclosure. It's just different than state public disclosure.
Yes.
Okay. And so let's move on to that. We had a lot of things happen, even though
I'm still recovering from the mining summit.
Really?
Oh, yeah. It was just absolutely fascinating. You had the eggheads from the government talking about railroads and kind of these big ideas. And you had the mining guys saying, we just need a bridge here. It's big enough to take our trucks, so it was really the kind of frank discussion, and at the same time this kind of projection into the future, which is what we expect government to do, right? A mine company just says, well, we want to get our mine up, and it's the government's idea. I mean, it's government's role and responsibility to take that big long view and say, what does all this mean? And so you had both of that going on, and you had really the principal players in terms of the two mine companies that are nearest to production, and the state DOT and ADA. The fascinating thing to me was a statement by the folks at ADA. They said, you don't, as a community, you shouldn't look at this as a mine or two mines. You need to decide whether you want to be, this level of port and then you work towards building that level of port, and then in 50 or 100 years, you know, these different customers develop. You said mines will come and go, but you have that infrastructure there, and
so brought kind of a level of they brought a perspective.
Yeah, a little more perspective on kind of what we're doing with this thing and how we might go about it.
Mm-hmm. Right, because members of the public sometimes just react to the idea that, oh my goodness, we're building a big chute, you know, for all the ore that can possibly mm-hmm. be pulled out of the hinterlands and throwing it onto the Lutac dock or wherever.
Yeah, and it was really refreshing to find out that other communities have gotten into this haven't necessarily figured it out either. I mean, one of the comments was that the state, I think, has spent $67 million over in Skagway for that ore facility. And it's never paid itself off, apparently. I mean, it's, you know, it may eventually, but they've been, you know, shipping ore through Skagway since when the railroad was still an industrial railroad. Mm-hmm. It definitely, I think, for the public's perspective, gave a lot of different perspectives on how this thing might develop. And I the railroad stuff was obviously the most fun, with the guy saying
it was. I agree with that,
because everybody loves a choo-choo train. And you know, they said if you take a look at this, all these mineral deposits, and you assume that China's appetite for these resources is not going away, we'll be here for 50 or 70 years or something, then they say the economics for something like a railroad start looking good. Mm-hmm. You know, that you don't mm-hmm. build a railroad for a single mine, but if you're sitting on a big pile of resources that people are going to want to get for the next 50 or 70 years.
And the source of those might change from one place to another, but still they all funnel down into
in the same area.
Port.
And, of course, also that with a railroad, you build a little bit of it. You build it. Nobody builds 2,000 – well, I guess the federal government to an extent did that with the Transcontinental Railroad. But, you know, you build a little railroad in little sections. Is that mm-hmm. how you pay for a railroad? But, yeah, it was endlessly fascinating to have all those smart people around the table and listening to them.
Great. And you enjoyed it too, Margaret.
Yeah, I went to the chamber portion of it. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Anything else this week? Now, I understand that there was some kind of controversy of sorts at the school board meeting. Was
oh,
there?
You stayed for that one, Tom.
Oh yeah,
Margaret picks and chooses.
I had to do election coverage. So.
I love this this little element of our school district. It has a controversial issues policy, and of course, every time you step there, mm-hmm. there's going to be controversy.
All right. So, what is the controversy this week?
The controversy was Amy Gulick, who wrote "Salmon in the Trees." It's kind of a coffee table book about
It's being advertised all over town.
Yeah,
I mean, there's posters all over town for a book signing.
Yeah, and Amy has done – this is kind of one of these Tongass books. It has a conservation bent. It, you know, talks about – she opens with the premise, of course, that the salmon actually fertilize the forest, which is a kind of a relatively new understanding that we have.
It takes a lot of eagles to do that. I mean salmon, sorry. but it's all –
all
point
those
is
proteins.
Yeah,
right, everything's and everything's connected. And that
which
so
is what we're the
sponsor, right? The sponsors, right?
I mean, that's a global concept. That's a global concept that we're trying to promote with the Coyote terms or whatever. I mean, we're all talking about global connectedness.
Right. We all live downstream. What happens over here affects us over here.
There.
So anyway, the sponsor of the program wanted Gulick to speak to a school assembly, as she has in other communities. It appears that the school board influenced that decision outside of a public meeting, so it raises a lot of process questions at the school, and it kind of gets to why we have government, is to make collective decisions about, and in the terms of the school, about how we educate our children. And so there's a lot of good education questions wrapped up in this issue.
Mm-hmm.
I think people want to, you know, they it's a great issue for the press, because everyone
it's
has
controversial.
No, well, no, because what makes great issues for the press is ones that it's easy to have an opinion on, right?
Mm-hmm.
Once you start digging into the book and you start digging into the policy, it immediately becomes a lot less interesting and a lot more work. But
it's just a coffee table book after all, with a lot of pretty pictures.
Exactly. Yeah, it does get and it's hilarious to me that the board has this controversial issues policy, because like every time you go to that, you have to go to that policy. It's just going to be I think that they would maybe be better off calling it a public issues policy or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, instead of using the word
controversial issues
because
policy.
Because then it becomes controversial.
Well, yes, and then then people have to decide.
Is
it controversial to be followed by the policy?
And how do you test that? You go to the local coffee shops and find out what people are talking about? Are they talking about
and
this?
And it comes down to that. Do you think this is controversial?
I think it's a point. Just because you disagree with it doesn't make it controversial. I mean
right.
Just because some people may have a different – I don't think every difference of opinion is quote unquote controversial.
Right.
It's just difference of opinion.
And it means it may be.
Yeah.
That may be our defining.
And what's wrong with kids learning difference of opinions? I mean, that's the other question, I guess. But
okay. Was there something in the news this week, Margaret, with the with Kluckwan? I'm sorry, I didn't mean to put you on the spot.
Oh, it's just a bankruptcy. I did a bankruptcy update on the Kluckwan Inc.'s bankruptcy case update. They've gotten an extension because they're having board of directors elections in the next week, and the federal judge let them have an extension so they could do that. And it's just, I get a little excited about it because I don't think people locally realize what an important case it is for all Native corporations across the state.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people aren't saying it publicly, but a lot of corporations and firms and are watching this case because of the decision that could come down that could affect all Native corporations. So.
All right. Well, thank you very much. And when is it being postponed until when?
About November is when they'll continue the case for some of the stuff.
Okay. And that's time's up for the analysis of news of this week anyway, and thank you very much for checking in with us, and we'll check again with you in 2 weeks. Talk Around Town, and today's talking topic is tourism. After fish, tourism was Haines's hope for economic development. When five retired military families purchased Fort William H. Seward in 1946, they intended to convert the decommissioned Army post to a tourist attraction, and they focused on putting Haines on the map. The Chilkat Dancers, the highway bus tours, the first ferry of what was to become the Alaska Marine Highway, these were all envisioned by people in Haines. More than 60 years later, today, we can look back and we can see more prosperous days in the tourism business. And today we're going to look forward. The question that I have is Haines on the map? And we'll talk with Haines Tourism Director Tanya Carlson and Haines Tourism Advisory Board Member Judy Heimiller-Clark. Welcome.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you, Tanya? Good. So, Judy, I want to start with you. You're the daughter of Betty and Carl, two of the group who purchased Fort Seward. Were you aware of your parents' focus on growing Haines as a tourism town when you were a kid?
Oh, absolutely.
Tell me give me that perspective and how that influenced or affected your life and the fact that here you are sitting on the Tourism Advisory Committee.
My father was quite instrumental in trying to put Haines on the map tourism-wise. Excuse me. And growing up in that environment, when I moved back here about 9 years ago, I really felt that I wanted to participate a bit in the tourism part of the community.
Mm-hmm. When you were a kid, were you aware that the work that they were doing as a that they were all kind of focused as a group? I mentioned before, you know, the Chilcat, the little fairy that's now the Chilcat, mm-hmm. you know, that was brought in. The Halsingland Hotel with its bus tours. And I remember seeing as a kid a lot of pamphlets that were put together like in the 50s for, you know, attracting people into the Haines area. Mostly it was at that time on rubber tired, you know, on bus tours from the lower 48. Was that like a big, was that something that you were, I guess, a conscious thing? Were you aware Chilcat dancers might have been a part of that? Because your father was very instrumental in developing the Chilcat dancers.
Yes, I was pretty young. Those are the things that you just kind of grow up with without uh-huh. realizing that you were as isolated as we are. But there was really no way to get to Haines. We had the little spur road coming down from Haines Junction, but Haines as a destination was mm-hmm. not really marketed. Mm-hmm. So we tried mm-hmm. here as the gateway to the interior, I remember, was one of the kind of taglines mm-hmm. back in the 60s. Mm-hmm. And trying to share the beauty of the area and the culture of the area was very new at mm-hmm, that time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay, and so then let's turn to Tanya. That's your job to do exactly that. We'll talk a little bit about the direction of tourism for the future, but right now, could you give us a sense of kind of where are we, just in terms of this season, and then what you see or perceive as trends in the tourism business, or tourism industry, I guess, for Haines?
Yeah, certainly. You know, as far as this summer went, you know, we were kind of up and down. So, you know, when all the numbers come in, I hope that we at least remain on par with last year. Cruise mm-hmm. numbers were up. Some of our highway traffic went down and started to have a little bit of an upturn in the later part of the summer. So right now, I think we're on target to be, you know, more than last year on our highway traffic.
Really? That's
yeah,
very surprising because of the cost of gas.
Very right? much so. But, you know, we have a lot of Yukoners that come down. You know, they love Haines. We've certainly increased our marketing campaign up into the Yukon, mm-hmm. specifically Whitehorse, mm-hmm. Running all of our monthly ads with the Yukon News to highlight the activities down here and Canadian long weekends, mm-hmm. And have been back on the air with BBC and Whitehorse during the Canadian long weekends to highlight events that are coming up down here mm-hmm. because they do. They love to come down here.
When you said that the cruise ships, the cruise traffic is up, do you mean number of vessels or number of people that are on the vessels that are here?
Number of people, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because last year we had two ships that canceled, so we had that problem. And we had an extra princess ship this year, three dockings instead of just two.
And now I know that you have initiated, along with the other members of the community, I think Bart was very instrumental, and it might have been others too, in a program called Backroads.
Yes.
Right? Tell us about that and how is that developing?
Yep. You know, Backroads Alaska, it's going to be an uphill battle, at least on the cruise side. You know, at least I'm planning on marketing Backroads to both cruise and highway.
What does it mean?
Well, Backroads Alaska, our tagline is basically the road less traveled or the roads less traveled. So we're looking at rural communities. We're partnered with Sitka right now and, you know, possibly looking at Wrangell or Petersburg down the road or Valdez, mm-hmm. but trying to keep it with port communities so that we can tie in the cruise industry. But really just offering something on the cruise side that's not the mainstream. You know, we're not trying to take away from the mainstream markets, but we're trying to offer them something different or exclusive. You know, the nice thing is that we personally can only take one. Some of the others can take two, but you don't have the mass.
Oh, so you're still marketing to the large cruise ship companies, but you're just saying don't look at us as a different market rather than as a competing market.
Exactly. Yeah, we're focusing on the repeat cruisers. You know, a large percentage of Alaskan cruisers have been here before, and they want a different experience. So rather than going to the ports that they've been to, you know, one, two, three other times. So we're trying to offer something different for that market. And again, it's that exclusive thing. People love coming here and being the only ship in port.
Really mean anything different here on the ground for us in terms of what we offer as a community. Everything stays the same. It's really just a different way of marketing Haines.
Exactly. Okay. We're trying to market exactly what we have, which is our unique atmosphere, our small town, our rural environment. You mm-hmm. know, what people love about us is that, you know, we're not the mass markets and we have a friendly community that people just love.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's go back to the land tours, okay? Mm-hmm. One thing I did notice this summer, and maybe it's been there all along, but I wasn't aware of it in the numbers, is caravans. Maybe I just saw a couple of them that got lost and they were going down Main Street. I don't know. But it seemed to me that I saw a lot of, like, specifically Airstreams, or, you know, the silver ones, mm-hmm. you know? Are there more caravans?
You know,
road?
I think there may be. With the way the economy is nowadays, the long haul traveler that, you know, started in the lower 48 and came all the way up the Alcan and trying to hit as much of Alaska and the Yukon as possible, those folks are kind of going by the wayside because they just can't afford it anymore with the economy and the fuel prices and everything. But a lot of people are now flying into the destinations, whether it be Fairbanks, Anchorage, or Whitehorse, and then renting their RVs there. And you can get in with companies that will put together a full tour. So you've got that caravan thing. You've got 10 other RVs that you're traveling with. So you've got your guide, but you're still kind of on your own. You've got your lodging on wheels with you.
Mm-hmm. And that's kind of a model that was established. I first became aware of that with the Canadian, excuse me, I guess it's really European, where you fly from Frankfurt. I guess there's two destinations or two mm-hmm. Places in Europe, and then everybody lands in either Whitehorse or Anchorage, right? Or is it Fairbanks? And then rent the RVs.
Correct. Yeah. Right. Condor okay. Airlines has those wonderful direct flights that go right to Whitehorse. So we do get a lot of German-speaking Europe that comes down through those.
So I remember, so are we marketing Hanes in Europe right now specifically to capture some of those people?
Not specifically over to Europe. What we've done is partner with the Whitehorse Chamber of Commerce, and they create welcome packets for Condor Airlines, for rental cars, for rental RVs. So our information goes into all of that with Whitehorse.
I see. Okay. And that's working for us. Do we have a way of, like, tagging, finding out whether or not people came to Hanes from
that?
Yeah.
There, we don't have anything like that. We've been running a visitor survey this year. We have mm-hmm. about 400 right now that have come in through the season. Mm-hmm. So we've had a lot of German-speaking Europe, but, you know, it's not one of those things. How did you hear about us? They don't always mark down, okay, mm-hmm. we saw your visitor guide in this, or your print mm-hmm. guide mm-hmm. here. So, you know, it is hard to track because people don't remember all the streams that they see, Hanes. So.
Right. So is most of our traffic that comes by, you know, rubber-tired, I guess, or independent, they bring their own sleeping accommodations with them? In other words, it's an RV or it's a camper or a tent or something. Why I'm asking is, do you think Hanes has been hurt, and if so, how, by the loss of hotel rooms? I mean, that's something that we have been aware of here with the raising of the Thunderbird Motel here recently. We lost, 20-some rooms?
Right.
So has that impacted us? Have you had anybody show up on your doorstep and said, where do I sleep?
You know, over the big picture, I would say it hasn't. Just in talking to a couple of our other hoteliers, they thought they'd see an upturn, and they really didn't see too much of an upturn in their business. I think where it really affects us is our event weekends, mm-hmm. Where we really need those rooms and we just don't have them. So I mm-hmm. think this summer we were down 30 rooms, which is substantial for our community.
Right. And I do want to talk about events. You know, that's in several of the tourism studies, I guess, and the evaluations of what do we have to offer and what do we do best. And in the ones that I have read, there's been an emphasis on, you know, Hanes needs to do a lot more events. Now, it seems to me like we're pretty, as a community, exhausted by our events. It seems as soon as one finishes, another one comes up, and most of them are run by volunteers. And that's one of the things I want to get into a little bit. But for right now, please remind me, we've got the Eagle Festival. Mm-hmm. Well, let's start in January.
Okay.
Okay, we got the Alcan 200.
Right.
Okay. Then what's the next event?
The next big event would be Spring Fling.
Spring Fling.
End of April.
Okay.
We had, I think it was 200 this year come in for it. So it was up this year by about 30 people, I believe.
Remind me of what do we do at Spring Fling?
I've not been able to attend because I've had a TAIA UConn conference both times I've been here for it. But from what I understand, it's kind of like welcoming in the spring. The weather's starting to get nice. They do a dance and they have live music and a beer garden, I believe. It's over at the fairgrounds and it's run by the fair.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, and I should, it reminds me to say this is 766-2020, and this is a call-in show, and if you can contribute something to the program, that would be fantastic, and we'd love to hear from you. So we've got the Spring Fling, and then?
Next one is Beer Fest.
Beer Fest, okay.
Yeah.
We've got that. That was started years ago by Arnie Olson and has now moved. That's another event that has been now handled by the Southeast Alaska State Fair. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay, great. And then we have the Kluane Chilkat Bike Race.
Correct.
Okay. Oh, that's my goodness. Here we go. and then the fair. Okay.
Yep. And the Salmon Derby.
Oh, yeah. We've got the Salmon Derby. Oh, my goodness. Right.
Yes.
So we've got that. And that's something that the Haines Sportsman Association puts that on. And now we've got another event that's being, I guess, masterminded by a member of the Chamber of Commerce, and that's Christine Harder, I think. I don't know
Correct.
If she's independently doing this or not.
She may
be calling in. And that's Coho Days, and the point of that, I think, is to create something in the fall before we do the Eagle Festival.
Right.
But it's a lot more pared or down. It's just kind of a weekend for celebrating our Canadian visitors. So let's talk about events. They kind of seem like orphans sometimes. You know, are they officially sanctioned governmental or tourism department events? How do you deal with it, Tanya, as a tourism director? Like, how do you relate to the Eagle Festival, the Brew Fest, the Kluane Bike Race?
Certainly. My job is to market them. So I put the ads out depending on what the event is. We do it in the Yukon News and also the Capital City Weekly to get some of that Juneau market or other southeastern communities. That's my major entity with it. I try to help out where I can. I volunteered with the bike race this year since I didn't race. And if I were around more, I'd help out with the other fair programs, but I tend to be out of town. I'll be out of town for the Coho Days this weekend.
But, I don't mean to put you on the spot, but let's just talk about this for a minute. I mean, the tourism department, is it just you? You're the director. Is there not some way that we as a community can pull things together? I mean, it kind of makes me feel uncomfortable that, we're talking about events and you're saying, oh, well, I'm sorry, I had another commitment, whether professional or not, or I couldn't be there. But then who is there? Is it really just volunteer groups that are making all of these things happen? And if so, talk about that, Judy. You're shaking
I'm
your head.
I'm nodding my head, yes.
Yeah.
Tanya does have staff, but all of these things in Haines are pretty much volunteer driven. And we're getting tired.
Okay.
We I think that is it.
We do have Christine Harder on the phone right now. And Christine is the owner of a local retail store. And she's got a promotion going on. Hi, Christine.
Deborah. It's another great day in Haines to be thinking about Coho Days. Because why not have a party? Even though I've told everybody in all of Southeast Alaska who reads the Capital City Weekly that fall can be one of the best times of the year to visit Haines with our nice colors, but it'll still be great.
Right, it's going to be a great weekend. And so, tell me, how did you come up with this? But before, I think you've been listening to, obviously, the program. We've been talking about the communities, the fact that officially events are recommended as the one thing that Haines does well, that we need to promote them more. But yet we're trying to find, the mechanism to make these things happen so that they don't just kind of fall on the shoulders of volunteers. And I don't know, what is your vision for Coho Days?
Well,
My main vision was I wanted to get to know some of the Canadians, because even only being here 2 years, only 2 years, I knew that I kept seeing the same faces. But, you know, if they're paying with cash, and it's just like people in town, if they don't write me checks or use a credit card or a debit card, I don't get to know their names. But it seemed like a good combination of things to do. I had been talking through the downtown
revitalization
committee about wanting, you know, to do something, and everybody kind of looked at me like, yeah.
People are tired, especially.
Yeah, people are tired. They are. And, I mean, and the people who are the people who can make things happen often are making multiple things happen, mm-hmm. and they're working on lots and lots of things. And I always said, you know, that anything I want to make happen, if I want it to happen, I have to be willing to do it all myself. And that's kind of what I've had to do this first year.
And what are we doing?
Well, we're doing just a big, fun, crazy event downtown at the Harbor Bar, where we're charging or asking for a suggested donation of $10. And fortunately, the chamber has allowed me to do this through the chamber just because of my chamber membership, because I need an entity that's a nonprofit to run the suggested donation through.
Event, what is it that we can expect to have happen?
What you can expect is some great fishy hors d'oeuvres, because we are celebrating
Cody. Food
days.
Is always good. Yep.
Food is good. And you get a girl from Kodiak, I know fish. So food is good. And then I've had some great volunteers who said, oh, I'll bring a dessert or I'll bring something. So I do have a couple of other people who just like stop me on the street and are willing to help. But we're having some contests, but there's also going to be Greg Horner's band will be playing that night. And I said it's duct tape and denim, but I was just kind of introducing, putting my toe in the water about duct tape clothing this time. So,
okay, Christine. Well, we hope that our friends from Whitehorse bring their duct tape then. But mostly, I think that the thing that I'd like to just emphasize here is that I really appreciate the fact that you're acknowledging visitors from out of town and creating an event that over time is something that will pull people in from out of town. That's what I understand your main purpose to be.
Yes, and the people in the Yukon are so excited. What's amazing is I started talking about this in the summer, and people come in and I say, oh, and don't forget next week or in 2 weeks or whatever we're going to be doing. They go, I heard about that. Yeah, right. So-and-so told me about that. So I've created the buzz, and I think the Yukoners are really glad that there's going to be a
terrific
focus, you know, to their weekend.
All right.
It'll be a good time.
Great. Thanks, Christine.
Uh-huh.
Thank
bye-bye.
You. Bye-bye. That gives another example of how I know the tourism department is promoting the Coho Days in Whitehorse. So that's another thing that, you know, in 5 years that we'll say, oh, my God, the Coho Days has become, like, way too big. You know, just another thing to compete with all of our energy. But, you know, something does occur to me, you know, and that is that, you know, we have for so many years, I think, just kind of been plugging, and I don't mean any negativity by this at all, but, you know, kind of doing things the same way. And it occurs to me that, you know, we still do have a tax, and we raise a lot of money. I think it's over $400,000 that we raise for economic development and tourism. Mm-hmm. And have you ever thought that maybe we could be spending it in different ways? Like, just let me throw that out there, God forbid, that we actually, like, have a pool of funds for the management of events that are separate from, you know, the bigger picture of what is tourism, but like event planning and event structuring or event help.
Right.
Is that, I don't know, how would you respond to that?
I don't know. I mean, it's a big topic. And at the same token, you know, a majority of our events are run by the fairgrounds, so you'd be taking a job away from them as well.
Mm-hmm.
We've got three events right now that are outside of that. So I know there are those that would like to look at an event planner, but you know, events are a lot of work, and it's more than just one person. Mm-hmm. It's a whole team of people, and it's even more than what my department can take. I mean, right. it's Tammy and I for the year, and then I've mm-hmm. got one mm-hmm. part year person.
But I'm thinking right now, and I'm thinking out loud. But mm-hmm. I mean, a pool of funds could be available for four groups in the community who meet certain criteria, you know, to maybe have grants or whatever of funds, of public funds to assist. I'd like to talk about the fair, and I hope that we get some call-ins on this too. But there have been I have heard about the other communities now that are talking about wanting to sponsor a fair. Mm-hmm. I don't know what their fair looks like, sounds like, smells like, but I certainly know what ours does, and it's been really doing really well in the last couple of years. Seems, you know, it's got a lot of life, you know, back into it, where it's kind of stumbling for a while. What do you know about that venue, the fair venue or the fair market?
Yeah, outside of Haines, I've not heard too much. I know there are a few other communities starting their own beer festivals, but I've not heard about any other community fairs going on.
Does that concern you as a tourism director that we would be that other communities will be trying to compete with the same kinds of events that we have?
You know, I guess I can see it from both sides. You know, I know Juneau has started one, and theirs, I believe, was just last month or maybe late August. So I don't know if I necessarily see them as much of a competition. A majority of the people who come in for our beer fest are Yukoners, and, you mm-hmm. know, we're an easy target for them. You know, it's a nice drive down, or, you know, it's hopped on the short ferry ride out of Skagway. So, you know, I think they're our main market when it comes to Beer Fest, and it'll continue to be that way. And we have people who come up from the lower 48 as well, because we've created a name over 20 years. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, Juneau's just starting out, Skagway's just starting out, and mm-hmm. it's going to take time for them to build anything. And mm-hmm. I think we've got a good thing. I don't think it's going to get lost.
People come from down south to come to the Haines Beer Fest?
There mm-hmm. have been,
wow.
Oh yeah.
Wow, that's pretty terrific. So let's talk too for just a minute about our the things that draw people, you know, to the community. So the events, like you say, we've been building the beer fest for 20 years, mm-hmm. and now we can see the results of that. Let me throw this out there. What about the Heather effect? What about the Parker effect? Now, I have to disclose that Parker Schnabel is my nephew, but that's not why I brought it up. I just bring it up because, you know, there are people, I know that Heather daily receives emails mm-hmm. from people who want to come to Haines, who are coming to Haines because they have read her book or seen oh, yeah. an article or read her blog or whatever. And there are other writers in the community, too, who have blogs and who have written books and that sort of thing. How can we, or should we capitalize on those things?
Oh, I think absolutely. I've been a tour guide for 7 years now.
Do you wear a button with I Know Parker Schnabel on it?
No, I do wear one that says Backroads Alaska.
All right.
I work for Rainbow Glacier Adventures, and we do small group tours, very, very personalized. I have a lot of people that want to drive by Heather's house. They would love to meet Heather if they could.
Uh-huh.
Randy and I did a trip at the end of May, 1st of June. We drove to Arizona and back mm-hmm. and stopped a lot and went through the Pacific Northwest. Everywhere we went, we had mining equipment in the back of the truck or a pump. People would come up and see the license plate from Alaska and start talking about Gold Rush Show and Parker's
mm-hmm.
novel.
Mm-hmm.
So everywhere we went, literally almost every state in through Canada, people, it's great advertising for Haines.
And the same with my father. I attended him at a hospital, and all of the interns and the doctors yeah. and everybody and people in the cafeteria. So, I mean, I'm not saying that we necessarily need to exploit in a negative way, that in a way that's intrusive mm-hmm. in people's lives, like Heather's life. I mean, she doesn't mm-hmm. necessarily want to look out her kitchen window and have to wave at people
the bus. Yeah,
that are
right.
standing parked in her parking lot, or in her driveway. She could have a parking lot, but in her driveway. But yet, what impact does that have, and what can we as a community do, if allowable, you know, to capitalize, I guess, on that? Have you considered what we might do to pull together, you know, the Discovery Channel or Gold Rush with Haines? Can you actually market it that way?
Well, what we've done this year, because Gold Rush really has been very popular. We get a number of people off the cruise ship that ask about it, that come into the visitor center asking, are they going to see Parker in town? And, you know, it's really quite interesting. What we did this year with our marketing plan, since we got rid of a lot of our print ads and went to online marketing, which we were doing very little of, we are doing an ad campaign that just started October 1st. So it goes through all of third quarter with Discovery Media. So it goes through the Discovery brand of websites, so Discovery Channel, TLC, and it's a banner campaign for 3 months. So it targets around the Gold Rush because it is Discovery Channel's number one show.
So that's an interesting aspect of the tourism promotion that I was unaware of. So you have turned over or you've left. So tell me about the finances of that. You kind of left. We were, what, in like a hundred, how many hundreds of thousands of dollars were we spending on ads, print ads?
Yep.
Tell me the finances of how, what we've shifted.
Trying to remember here. We've got a little over $20,000 that we switched over to specifically online marketing. So we have our Discovery Channel campaign that we're running. We're also doing a TripAdvisor campaign, which has already shot our TripAdvisor clicks to the website up into the top five. They were in the top 25. Now they're up in the top five for people visiting our website off of TripAdvisor. Mm-hmm. In fact, in just the first 3 days of the Discovery Channel, they're already in the top five for click-throughs.
Wow.
So,
okay. And what, how is that going to impact us? I mean, other than people wanting to come here, what will it mean for us here in the community when they arrive? What will they be looking for?
Well, you know, it'll be what our website says. There, you know, we're adventure. You know, we offer outdoor recreation. So whether it be you want to come in and do some camping, you want to go look for wildlife, you want to go kayaking or rafting, you know, those are the things that we offer to visitors to our community.
Okay.
Great. And an intimate touch, not the masses of the sheeple being herded.
Right.
Okay. And before we close out here today, I do want to talk a little bit, touch on the Tourism Advisory Board. I know has been the topic of maybe the public purchase of the fast ferry transportation, so that we have more security, I guess, a public subsidy for or ownership of the fast ferry to allow us to transport between Skagway and possibly even Juneau. I don't know what those discussions are like, but how are you dealing with that question of transporting people between Haines and Skagway?
Hmm.
You're not. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. I wasn't aware of that.
Okay. Sorry. I thought that the subject that had been advanced by Bart and Karen and others who have excursions and who are currently operating the, I guess isn't it called the fast ferry?
Yeah, Skagway
okay.
Fast Ferry.
So it's been considered, or at least brought forward, that be a public ownership. Is it not correct?
Yeah, they've looked at a few things. Mm-hmm. They are thinking about going to a nonprofit because they don't make any money anyway. Mm-hmm. If we lose the ferry, we're going to be in a hard position because that means no more Skagway tours.
Mm-hmm.
And it would mean a pretty big impact to our community economically.
Right.
So,
is that not something that the Tourism Advisory Board would discuss?
We have not looked specifically at that subject yet. I know they were talking about the Klukwan Dock for a while, and I think that situation has already solved itself. The American Spirit was pulling up to the lightering float and moving our fast ferry over to the small boat harbor, which mm-hmm. is where our fishermen go. Mm-hmm. And next year, the American Spirit, they're doing something to their boat where they'll be able to disembark guests from the top deck, which means they can pull right to the face of the PC dock, therefore not offsetting our fast ferry any longer. So,
okay.
Yeah, so it's kind of solved itself.
Okay. But I guess in a way I still think that topic is out there. You mm-hmm. know, like what can or should or could the community as a whole publicly do to sponsor and help to build and promote the tourism industry? I guess that's the question. That I guess I was seeing that as the a role of the Tourism Advisory Council or a committee or whatever you're calling it, board, mm-hmm. Tourism Advisory Board. To you know, involve itself in that. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to put you on the spot.
No,
I thought I saw it on the agenda somewhere before posted. So if people in the community have issues that they want to talk about with tourism, they can come to the Tourism Advisory Council meetings, can they not?
Oh, absolutely. Definitely.
Yeah,
we
okay.
would more than welcome them. We actually rarely have any public come to our meetings.
Okay. Well, then I guess that's something we want to promote, that mm-hmm. the Haines Borough is structured in such a way that it has an advisory council or an advisory board. And its purpose is to advise the assembly on issues that are relevant to tourism. So, okay, we'll hear from you then. And I want to thank you very much for being with me here today and helping us to understand a little bit more about some of the issues that are surrounding tourism. Thanks a lot, Judy. Thank you, Tanya.
Thank you, Deborah.
Thanks, Deborah.
Player in American life and is a major player in Haines. It contributes to most domestic violence, to negligence, to assault, auto crashes, vandalism, and illnesses. Few of us want to admit that we just might consume too much. But there is a time and a place for people who know that alcohol has taken over their lives, and it's called Alcoholics Anonymous. We're checking in with AA today, and in keeping with the anonymity that AA requires, our guest is an AA member. Welcome, and thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Deborah.
You bet. Unlike many social programs that address behavior issues, Alcoholics Anonymous isn't led by professional social workers, as I understand it anyway, and it's just people coming together more or less to help each other. So I guess my first question, is it difficult for you as an AA member to come forward today and talk with us about the program?
Not at all.
All right, great. So tell me, I know Alcoholics Anonymous is identified as a 12-step program. What does that mean?
Well, it is a 12-step program that takes you through the 12 steps, which is from 1 to 12 with someone that is an alcoholic. It is not run by professionals. It's one alcoholic talking to another alcoholic mm-hmm. and sharing their experience, strength, and hope. And what that would be called is sponsorship. A older someone with a lot of sobriety will mm-hmm. bring in a newcomer and take them through those 12 steps. And those 12 steps have proven, since they were founded in the late 30s, to change people's way of thinking and outlook.
Is it like homework? I mean, are there things that you act like you have to do? Like you go to step one and it's like something you have to do and it's hard?
No.
I mean, it might be hard. But
the 12 steps are suggested. There's a lot of members of AA who have never made it all the way through the 12 steps.
Okay. And that was a question that I have about the program, too. Is it you can – so is it like you advance as time goes by and get more and more committed, I suppose the word would be. Like, because I'm thinking people know about smoking, for example, and there's this adage that, you know, you have to quit 7 times before you really quit. So are there things like that with AA, and people in the program recognize that and what?
And keep coming back. And you don't give up, just like with smoking. There's relapses. Some people get it the first time. It's just like anything, riding a bike. Some people get it the first time. Some people get it the 20th uh-huh. time. And we encourage people to keep coming back, even if they've had a relapse or a little slip.
Okay, so and why is AA needed? I mean, why is it so hard for us, you know, to just cut back on, you know, like you wake up one morning, you got to banging headache, and you think, boy, I really drank too much. And then you remember, you know, I drank too much last weekend, too, and gosh, maybe the weekend before that. So I think I'll cut back now. Why is that so hard?
Because just like cigarettes, alcohol is addictive. In the 1950s, the American Medical Association declared alcohol alcoholism a disease. It's just like other diseases. So it's not, a lot of people think, well, if I drink three or four, I'm all right. But with alcoholic, it's what we say is the first drink gets you drunk. You, that starts that craving for more and more and more, mm-hmm, and then you.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I think that, that in the community, and in my introduction, I didn't allude to it, I said it right out. I mean, Haines, I don't know if we're different than other communities. I don't know if we are or not, and maybe you can help give me a perspective on that. But certainly when you pick up the newspaper and read the police report or the court report, when you just, you know, acknowledge what goes on in the community, it seems to me that there is a tremendous amount of alcohol being consumed at young ages, young, all ages.
Sure.
Talk to me about that.
Sure. Well, that's true. And another saying, my sponsor, would say that the harder the drinking town, the better the AA.
Harder the drinking town, the better the AA. Talk to me about that.
Because those people had to work at getting sober and staying sober. We say one day at a time. So one day at a time, you stay sober and you work with the fellowship, and we have meetings and things mm-hmm. like that, as you know.
Yeah, it's hard then in a town that has such an active drinking culture to stay away from it or to not join people, I suppose. And you have to stay away from or learn to discipline yourself, or, you know, so that you don't participate. Do you find yourself feeling isolated? Do you think that's why people maybe don't join AA? Because they think they're taking themselves out of a social circle?
They may feel that way. What I've found is that I can go to different events that have alcohol. It doesn't particularly bother me. If I have a need to be there, I go. I think when a lot of people think, oh, no, my life's over, especially me, I drank for a long time. But that's what I found was my life just got better and better and better.
Oh, okay. Now, one thing I noticed, too, or I know about AA, it's all over. I mean, I don't know if you have it in China and in the Philippines or in South Africa. I don't know if it's all over the world. Is it?
150 countries, over millions of people, over 2 million people in 150 countries. The big book, the basic test of Alcoholics Anonymous, has been transferred into over 50 languages.
Wow. I know that as a person walking down Main Street, Haines, Alaska, one day this summer, two guys in great big honking motorcycles, Harley Davidsons, you know, pulled up and said, hey, do you know where AA meets in Haines? And I did. And I thought, wow. You know, here are guys traveling. I didn't know where they were. They didn't have Alaska plates. I mean, they were somewhere else. But that is one of the things that really impressed me, was that the fellowship, as you refer to it, is embracing everywhere. So are there – tell me about the Haines – you know, it's about meeting. Tell me where and when, and can you come just once to try it out without everybody, you know, like telling everybody else, oh.
And that, we are anonymous, and so you can come. It's at 6 p.m. at the Gateway Building above the DMV in the public health classroom at Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday. At current time, all the meetings are open. So,
and all of them are at 6?
6, yeah. We have open and closed meetings in Alcoholics Anonymous. Currently, all the Haines meetings are open, which means that people that are just think they might have a problem or have want to have a better understanding of Alcoholics Anonymous can come. If it's a meeting is closed, that means it is for a person that has admitted that they are alcoholic.
I see. And so the content of the meeting is different then,
correct.
Right? So what would it mean if I just wanted to
investigator, or maybe I just wanted to find out more about it than everybody else. Oh, you all go to the meeting knowing it's open.
Correct.
Is that correct? Okay.
That's right. So if it states in – there's a nationwide meeting, of course, nowadays, even a website. So you can find out if the meeting is open and closed, if it's a 12-step meeting, if it, what kind of meeting it is.
All right. Thank you very much, Alcoholics Anonymous member.
Thank you, Deborah.
All right. Thank you. It is about 5 minutes in front of the hour, about wrapping up to this week's Talk Around Town and everyone's favorite part of the program. My name is
Elise Say Lammers.
Hi, Elise. How are you doing?
Hi, I'm good. How are you?
Great. Good. Tell us about yourself. This is your 5 minutes. We're here to learn about you. What do you want us to know about you, Elise?
Boy, okay. Well, this is my fourth summer in Haines, or at least
summer,
either as a visitor or as somebody who came here to work. Yeah, so I'm just a seasonal person. This past summer is the third time I directed the Summer Youth Theater Conservatory show.
Oh, wow.
We did Treasure Island this summer. The year before that, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. And the year before that, Jungle Book. And currently, I am directing, along with Mark Stevens, Oklahoma. That's going up this weekend.
And is this something that you just love to do, and so you're doing it because you love to do it? Were you trained in it? Did you go to school for it?
Yeah, I went to school for acting.
Where?
The university, or DePaul University Theater School.
DePaul.
DePaul. It's in
where
Chicago.
Is that? Oh, wow. Is that where you're from?
It is where I'm from. Yep. It's a conservatory for theater, and I got a Bachelor of Fine Arts in Acting. Gosh, going on almost 10 years ago. Oh, my God.
I know how young people get really excited about their birthdays.
Actually, my birthday is this Sunday.
All right. And what year is it?
I'm turning 30.
All right.
30.
And that will be on Sunday.
On the closing
show
of Oklahoma.
Wow, on the closing show of Oklahoma. How did you get from Chicago to Haines?
Oh, I knew a friend in college that came up here to pursue mountain climbing. And so I came up to visit three summers ago.
Are you a mountain climber?
No. One day, maybe. Hope.
They have really cool shoes, mountain climbers shoe, I think.
Yeah, a lot of other
rock climbers.
Accessories, yeah. Yeah, I'm starting with hiking and trying to get up that way, and then maybe one day I'll put on those funny looking shoes.
Okay, so is it a direct flight, and you haven't traveled along the way?
I drove up the past two summers, so I have stopped in various places in the lower 48 and then up through Canada.
And where do you go in the winter?
Last winter I traveled around for a bit and ended up in Alta, Utah, doing the ski bum thing. But before that, I was a full-time middle school drama teacher. And so I was in Chicago for the school year.
You're hardly old enough to do all of these things.
Oh, wow. Thanks, Deborah.
You were a middle school
drama teacher.
Mm-hmm. Where was that?
Palatine, Illinois, outside of Chicago.
Right. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
A little private independent school for gifted and talented kids.
All right.
Even though they're all gifted and talented, aren't they?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Especially in Haines, Alaska.
and everywhere, America, I think, all children are talented and very, very special. Okay. Anything else that you'd like us to know that maybe isn't, quite as public as that?
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess I'd like to reiterate that everybody in Haines should come see Oklahoma this weekend.
Oh, she's a promoter in addition to being a thespian.
Yes, that's right.
All right. Well, thank you very much for joining us, Elise. That was your 5 minutes.
Woohoo. Thanks
all right.
So much,
you're very welcome. Talk Around Town. Thanks very much for joining me. We've got memorial services for Janet Harrington tomorrow at the Choquette Center for the Arts. Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, Lynn Canal Community Players production of Oklahoma. I want to thank you for joining me today and thanking my guests, Elise Lammers, Tanya Carlson, and Judy Heinmiller-Clark. We checked in today with Alcoholics Anonymous. Thanks for joining me. And Skagway.